most awesome.
All right, who wants to go first? You or me?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Welcome to Camera Dojo, the official podcast of CameraDojo.com. This is your host, Kerry Garrison.
Hello, and welcome once again to Learning Digital Photography. This is your host, Jason Anderson. Kerry, welcome to Canon Blogger.
And welcome to Camera Dojo.
It's great to do a podcast together. We're actually calling this a multicast this week, folks. We should be doing this more often, but we're starting as of now.
It's kind of weird. Don't think this is an April Fool's joke, because we're actually mid-April here.
Yeah, it's like way past April 1st, and we're not doing any joking around. We got some serious stuff to talk about this week.
We're not merging our sites. It's nothing like that. Jason and I are kind of run sister sites, sister podcasts. I mean, we've been on the same network.
Yeah,
we help each other with advertising and marketing. So why we haven't been on each other's shows more often boggles my mind.
Yeah, I think we've only done like one simul show or multicast show together, and we really are going to be doing these more often, because we're going to start putting a whole bunch of ventures together so you can hear both of us talking on the same show, talking about the same kind of content. And this is a great show to do that, because we got a lot of big news coming out. Of course, the big one is
I was in Maui for a week.
Wait for it. Oh, that's right. That was huge.
Right. It was huge. It's humongous, right?
No one knew you were gone for a week. No, I'm kidding.
Everybody wants to know what I did in Hawaii, right?
Yes. Everyone wants to know what you did in Hawaii. So tell me, which island did you go on?
We were in Maui, mm-hmm. and we were going to do some snorkeling and some hiking some other things. And I wanted to put together a whole series of articles on
Maui. Yeah, and Maui specifically, right?
What you would take to go on a trip to someplace like, oh, I don't know, Maui.
Maui, right? Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I took the brand new Vanguard Uprise 38 messenger-style camera bag.
Awesome.
I took the DigiCap underwater bag for my point-and-shoot camera.
Nice.
I took the SnapSights SS1000 underwater camera. What else? Oh, I took the liquid image snorkel mask with the built-in 5-megapixel camera.
Wow.
I took a bunch of gear out there to see what this stuff is like to actually use these things. And I've got all the video processed. It's all going to be up on Camera Dojo in the next week. So look for these really cool things about underwater photography and travel and backing up stuff in the field. I got the Nexto Extreme. Super, super fast compact card backup system. So some cool stuff. So that's obviously the big news, right?
Right. And the second biggest news is everyone wants to know why I've been out of the loop for the last 3 weeks and why I haven't done a podcast. And just to let everyone know, I'm recovering. I'm feeling better. I had a really bad head cold, but I'm still alive and kicking. So those are the two big news stories is where were we? What were we doing for the last 2 weeks?
Right.
Because we had all this stuff going on because – you know, we didn't tell anybody that we were going because we kind of wanted to keep it on the down low. But then there's something happened with Adobe.
Yeah.
What they do? They did something. They're calling it what was it? They were taking off, or it was a launch, or it was a rocket, or
it was something like
that. Was it something?
It certainly was not a product release.
No, they would not have released any kind of product or anything. I don't know, like the next iteration of Photoshop or anything like
no.
that. That's not due out for another 18 months. So, wait a minute.
I do want to be clear that this event, the Adobe launch event, is not a product release event.
Yeah, it's not a product release event. Because they don't do product releases until it's usually like an 18-month schedule or something like that. And it's only been 17 months.
Yeah.
So nothing's been released yet, folks, but we did get back from our little trips and vacations and that being kind of in a funk there for a while to hear that Adobe did a preemptive launch event where they said, we're going to launch something. What was it they said they were going to do?
I don't know. But before we get into that,
I want to
ask you a quick question.
Okay.
What do you think about the iPad?
That's another piece of big news, actually, that came out from Apple, and that iPad looks very, very interesting because we've not heard anything about that yet. So maybe we should spend some time talking about that.
It came out when I was in Maui.
Okay.
There's no Apple store on Maui that I could find, so couldn't see it. I came back. I was home for a day and then had to take another trip to Phoenix where I was busy all day. Couldn't see it.
Man.
Finally got over to the Spectrum, went over to the Apple store. had the iPad in my hand, and wow, is this a bigger iPod Touch?
So are you going to get it then? Do you think it's something that you're going to use in your portfolio?
Well, here's the thing. You know, it's anyone who sits there and tries to tell you, no, this is not a large iPod Touch, has never used an iPod Touch. It is. I own an iPod Touch.
I love our Touch. I think we both love our Touches.
It's a big iPod Touch. It's really, really fast. I mean, it is blazing fast.
Yeah.
You click on something, it's open. It's really fast. The bigger display means things like mail, your calendar, notes, you know, the WordPress app, things like that just work so much better.
Sure.
I do a lot of remote access with Log Me In, having a big screen, beautiful for something like that. And I gotta say, for a photography portfolio, I can't imagine anything better.
Yeah, I think this totally rocks. This definitely is going to be a great device, a great, call it another utility in your utility belt for a tool that you have available to you as a photographer. And with the what they've got, a couple different versions now, and then they're going to add another version with 3G in another couple weeks. So right now they've just got the Wi-Fi ones.
But here's what I think is how I would use it. I mean, besides the fact that I could, you know, got 10 hours of battery life, I could use on a plane, I could do write articles and all that, the main purpose for me is going to be to have my product, my, you know, photography portfolio for whatever it is, whether it's my products or people or weddings, depending on who I'm talking to, and you hand it to somebody.
Yeah.
And you go, just flip through the pictures. Now they're holding it in one hand. They're flicking pictures with their other hand. It is tactile.
Yeah.
They've got something physical in their hand. Before that, I would have my laptop, I'd flip up, and they would just sit there with their hands in their lap, not knowing what to do, watching a slideshow.
Yeah, it's more interactive. That's definitely
exactly.
I think you hit the nail on the head with that. The interactivity functionality of it is going to be the game-changing element of it for photographers. Now, if you look outside the photography realm, there's probably going to be other uses as well, and both of us being kind of IT geeks, I can see a huge benefit for doing things like white papers, you know, and PDFs and EPUB, mm-hmm. you know, and ebooks and things like that. But for photographers, I think the real cap on it is the interactivity that you can give the user when they're looking at your portfolio, whether you're trying to land a client and you show them an existing portfolio, or you're taking the results of a wedding shoot to the bride and you're sitting down with them and saying, okay, go through, tell me which pictures you want. They're probably going to order at least 20% more prints when they're using something like this. And that's ultimately what is going to be the game-changing impact from the iPad, because you're going to land more clients, you're going to get more business if you have something like this in your utility belt.
Now, have you seen Zosh?
Yes.
So Zosh allows you to take a contract,
yep.
which this you can awesome. Actually read on this thing. I mean, it's not quite an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper,
it's close.
You know, they can easily read a contract and then with their finger sign it right there on the spot.
Yeah, and that's huge. And that's huge. And I tell you, having just gone through the whole process of selling one house and closing on another house and dealing with the frustrations and having to print out a PDF, and I'm technically inclined and technically aware, and it's easier for me to print something out on my computer and sign it with my pad, using my pen. And it's still tedious. Mm-hmm. And after I discovered Zosh, I was just like, oh, my God. This is what the real estate industry needs to use for their documentation. Oh. That's how easy Zosh is to use. And if you have something like the iPad and Zosh going on, done. You're done in 5 minutes.
Except to use Zosh, you need an internet connection. So if you're meeting someone at a place that doesn't have Wi-Fi, you're going to have the 3G version.
The 3G, right.
However, right. I think some apps are coming to get around that, because just yesterday I ran across a different app specific for model releases that allows them to sign them right there on the spot.
Interesting. Now I'm going to have to catch up with you offline and learn more about that. So, well, that's the first piece of news, and thank you for bringing that up, Kerry, because I completely forgot to bring up the news about the iPad. I forgot. You being in Hawaii, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. He's a week behind on the news, so we didn't hit up on that news.
Those are just – when you start thinking about, okay, your pictures, I mean, yeah. having that yeah. interactivity, then – your contracts, your model releases. Yep. Wow.
Yep. It's going to be game changing for photographers in so many ways if you think of the possibilities. And that's the thing is most people right now are thinking of it like an iTouch, like you said, where okay, you've got your mail, you've got your games, you've got a couple neat little utilities, but that's pretty much it because you really can't sign anything, you can't do documentation, you can't really see a portfolio. That's what your netbook is for, your laptop is for. The iPad kind of combines all of that.
Yeah, I do show people my portfolio on my iPod Touch, and I'm sure that's helped me in the past, but the images just aren't that big.
Yeah.
I mean, they look great, but come on.
Yeah, on a 3-inch screen, you're not really going to be able to see anything. And yeah, the photos do look great. Like when I pull up my portfolio of my work on my iTouch, and I'm looking at it right now, and I've got a nice butterfly, and isn't that pretty? And I've got a nice little eagle shot, and yeah, that's really nice too. But it's a small screen. It's a small enough amount of real estate where people really can't see the detail that you have in shots and the quality of composition because it's just too small.
It's too small, yeah.
And you don't have to go up to 16x24 or 30x40 or 60x40 to be big enough for people to see it, but you've got to be bigger than what to touch.
But now the iPad is what, like a 7.5-inch screen?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's
– It was heavier than I thought it was. Did you think it was going to be heavier – that heavy?
I thought it was going to be lighter.
Yeah. I did too. I was a little.
It's got two batteries in it.
Yep. Yeah.
That's how they. That adds weight. Well, but so it, you know, when most people have seen images, or other people have shown them images, or there's people who take 4x6s to show customers. That's great. 4x6. I mean, that's what most people are printing today. I mean, 99.8% of images are printed on 4x6.
Yeah.
You're showing them double that size.
Yeah, so and that it's just huge. It's just huge.
Again, not quite 8x10, but
big enough.
Pretty freaking big.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you think about it from the perspective of a photographer that's trying to say get into an art gallery, you know, you're doing fine art photography or anything like that, it's big enough to where people can see the gallery owner can see enough detail to determine whether or not they need, you know, actual prints to look at on the wall and determine layout. The iPad is going to be big enough to actually see the detail that they would need to see.
Yeah. And now, on top of that, they have the OS 4 announcement that adds multitasking.
That's huge.
Looks like it will probably add printing ability. So that's kind of cool.
Didn't hear about the printing ability.
Yeah, so
that's very cool.
You have direct print ability, which would be cool. But there's, I think what we'll see is, I think we'll actually see some photography related apps where I can go through, I want to stuff it with images, and as we go through, I just want to like double tap or something to select that, and now I've got a print order from a client.
You know what I'd like to see come up with the iPad or the iPhone in the near future? Bluetooth synchronization, so you can sync your iPhone to your iPad, so you can take a picture with your iPhone and then show it on an iPad.
Yeah.
How cool would that be to have that kind of pairing?
Not having a camera is kind of a bummer, you know.
But you don't have to. If you can sync it up with your iPhone, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, but come on. The iPad's a perfect Skype device if it had a front-facing camera.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, if it had a built-in video camera, that'd be awesome. I didn't even think of that. That'd be great.
To me, that's a mistake. I mean, I wanted a front-facing camera on that thing. I probably would have bought one already.
Hey, but, yeah. Well, the only reason I didn't buy one is because my boss at work bought one, and I get to play with his whenever I want. So it was kind of a moot point.
I didn't buy one because I just went to Maui, and then I bought a new TV. So my iPad budget is at zero right now. But
exactly.
I think I will get one just for the portfolio stuff and to work with things like the model releases and the contracts and you know, try and move my photography business a step up.
Absolutely. I think that's the whole movement that we're seeing in today's day and age is more towards mobile connectivity, being connected to do pretty much anything you want from anywhere, and the iPad is definitely a step in that direction.
Well, here's another one.
More options available.
What if I've got the 3G version, so now I've got internet access anywhere, and I'm sitting down with a potential client, and they say, and I say, well, where's your wedding going to be at? And they go, oh, it's going to be at the Pacific Edge in Laguna Beach. So I can go, oh, let's check that out. Oh, Laguna Pacific Edge. Oh, yeah, here's that place. Oh, right. Oh, yeah, that's really nice. I see where it is. You know, or I go, I've shot there. Let me bring up some pictures that I took there before.
Right.
You know, and so now you can add that to that presentation, and I just think the professionalism that shows is just through the roof.
Right. Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. It's definitely going to be a game changer on so many levels. It's just, wow. It's very exciting. And we have so much exciting stuff going on because it's not just the iPad, but we also have a whole bunch of other news announcements that were going on. Of course, the big one that just happened today is Adobe's pre-launch of Adobe CS5. Prior to that, they did another software launch where they did, what was it, Lightroom 3? Lightroom 3 Beta 2 got released.
God, we're so far behind.
Yeah, there's so much to cover. I'm just like, okay, let's see. We got
Lightroom 2.7 is out.
So you've got two versions of Lightroom out now. You've got Lightroom 2.7, which is a full production version. It's stable. It's been released. It's a free upgrade for anyone that owns Lightroom right now. And it's got a lot of great features and components that are added, including a lot of new camera raw conversions. So if you don't have that, if you're running 2.6 or an earlier version, make sure you go out and get the 2.7 update, and we can talk about that some more in a minute. The other big thing that came out on the Lightroom side is Lightroom 3 Beta 2.
Also got published.
And there is so much killer stuff. It's even better than Lightroom 3 Beta 1.
There's
so many updates to it. We're spinning. We're probably not going to be able to cover all of them because there's just so much to cover. But
I took my top like three.
Okay.
And I've already done a couple tutorials, or not tutorials, some overviews of those particular pieces on Camera Dojo. So if you want to see how some of those things work, you can check them out. I've got some more coming. So stay tuned for that. But the first one, let's talk about noise reduction.
Well, I see you stole mine now.
No, go ahead.
No, you're fine. Well, that's a big one for me too. The new noise reduction, the luminance, and the color noise reduction. And it's not just its presence, because one of them, what was it? It had light. It had luminance, or it had. Which one did it add? Now I'm forgetting. Which one it added?
It added color.
It added the color, but it's not just the addition of the one element of it. It's the amount of control and the quality increases that happen in the noise. Look at Carrie's demo that he does over on Camera Dojo, because he really does give a really good example of the quality of noise reduction that's increasing. And for me, that's a huge game changer, because now I no longer have to do a round trip between Lightroom and Noise Ninja or any kind of noise reduction plugin. I don't need the plugin anymore. I don't. I really don't. If the noise is that bad to where it's not recoverable inside of Lightroom, I'm probably not going to be keeping the shot at this point.
I went back because I don't use Noise Ninja or something else. If I can't do it in Lightroom, I chuck it, because I usually have enough images from a given event. But I went back to images that I had, quote-unquote, thrown away, because I don't actually ever delete anything.
Yeah, but you and me both. But
I went back to some non-usable images, and I was flat out blown away. They were not just usable, they were damn good all of a sudden.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's the beauty that all these software updates are doing, is just adding to the quality of the images that we already have in our existing libraries that previously we couldn't utilize. And we'll get to the Creative Suite side in a minute, but there's just so many things where you can remove noise that before you couldn't remove. Or you can remove objects now in CS5 that you couldn't remove before because of the content aware heal and all that. But that's a whole separate story. We're both just like the Energizer Bunny right now with all these different updates that are going on. But yeah, the new noise reduction in Lightroom 3 Beta 2 that I have open right now, that's a huge one for me. Another huge one for me is the video.
I'm going to cut you off here.
Go ahead.
This noise reduction, is it allows you to use an older camera. I could have been shooting my 30D at 1600 ISO, and now I can take my 50D and push it to 12,000 ISO.
The funny thing about that is I took a Canon A590 and did some time lapse work with it, and this is a crappy old point and shoot where the noise is just terrible in it. I mean, at ISO 400, the noise just breaks down ridiculously. Threw those into Lightroom 3 Beta 2, and there is no noise. There is none. It's gone.
Remarkable.
It's absolutely gone. I'm just like, holy crap. Holy crap, look at what this is doing. This is sweet. And that's a big game-changer thing for photographers because you have so many more keepers now.
Even though these cameras have pushed the ISO envelope, there's still noise. And now there isn't.
Exactly.
Now, that may be a slight over-exaggeration, but not by much.
It's not much because, I mean, I'm just looking at this one right here. This is a crappy little point-and-shoot shot I did when I was doing some time-lapse before a trip between the office and the house. And it was all grainy, and what I should probably do, I'll probably try and put together a time-lapse before noise reduction and after noise reduction because I'll just make that an action inside of Lightroom and process it on all 200 images, and I'll put both up, and you can see the difference in noise reduction levels that Lightroom 3 Beta 2 has, because it's really just amazing. Okay. It's just stunning.
It is. Okay, go ahead. Didn't mean to cut you off, but I did. But go ahead. Your next one?
We're going to be cutting each other off all hour long just because we're both so geeked about this stuff. But the second one for me was the video export for slideshows. Mm-hmm. Because previously you couldn't do that. You can only export a PDF. And now you can actually add music to your slideshows. You can have your clients seeing images and shows the way you want them to see it. It's a much more controlled environment, and it's just a more pleasing experience overall to have it as a video.
This was available in Beta 1, but it has been improved in Beta 2.
I'm sorry.
Since Beta 1 came out, I've been using this. When I shoot a wedding, now I go through and I do maybe like 50, 60, 70 what we call artistic edits. You know, those are the slideshow ones. Those are the main ones for the album.
Yeah.
And I go export as a video, toss in a real nice little love song type thing that I get from opsound.org because it's their Creative Commons license.
That's awesome. Yeah, great resource. So we should link that in the show notes. What's that again? Say it again.
Opsound.org.
Opsound.org. I think I used that for my timelapse one too, actually.
And boom, now I've got this video. I throw it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Now they can share their video with everyone. I can embed it in my website, which YouTube videos actually work on the iPad.
Yeah.
Just saying. And and I can send them a file. I can send them the MP4 file, and if they have an iPod Touch or an iPhone, they can put it on there and show all their friends.
Yep.
So that is a standard thing that I give everybody now is this slideshow that I just go click. And I'm done.
Exactly. And that's just a great feature to have. So this future release, Lightroom 3, when it comes out, probably in another – I'm guessing they're both going to be launched within the same time window, within another month, 6 weeks. So whenever Lightroom 3 comes out in its final version, you can use it for production purposes. Highly recommend using that feature. You really don't want to – I wouldn't recommend using Lightroom 3 Beta 2 for any kind of production work because it is still a beta. You can still crash. You can still lose data. You can lose images. You can lose slideshows. The odds are against it because Adobe has gotten so good at producing stable betas and really just getting feedback for different features that they might want to tweak here and there. So you're probably a little safer than you were than, say, with betas of 5 or 10 years ago. But keep in mind it is still a beta.
Nice disclaimer there.
And use at your own risk. Your mileage may vary. But like Carrie said, people are using it in production environments, and they're seeing some pretty fantastic results.
Okay.
What's your one now? Go ahead.
My next one is watermarking.
We're too geeked. Yeah, watermarking is awesome.
I mean, it is finally, with the exception of not being able to do borders, it is now up to par with Lightroom 2 Mogrify.
Yep.
So I no longer need – now, granted, Tim Arms, great product. It was donationware or something when I got. I gave him like $15 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have used that forever for doing watermarking. No longer. I can take a PNG file with the transparent background, put it anywhere on my screen, make it a percentage of this. I usually do like 30%. Let me take it to 60% transparency so it's there, but it's not, you know, like obnoxious. Boom, export, done. Every image is watermarked. Put them up on the web. I'm done.
Yeah.
part of my workflow built in. Thank you, Adobe, for listening to us on this one.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear that they are listening to more and more end users and consumers when they develop new releases. And proof positive is the beta 2 that they're operating on. This is the first time a software vendor has pushed out two betas, I think actually for Adobe even too, pushed out two betas to let the public use freely and openly and say, hey, tell us what else you want. Tell us what's working. Tell us what's not working. And the fact that they're doing this so openly is – kind of a big deal, not only for photographers, but just in the software industry, because it's showing how much they really want to get that user feedback. And that, yeah, in and of itself, I'm singing Adobe's praises left and right now because of that.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, Aperture 3 just came out.
See, I'm not an Aperture guy.
And Aperture 3 did take Aperture to a whole new level.
I'm hearing that. I'm not an Aperture guy. I don't know why.
I'm not. My iMac is sitting on the floor. I replaced it with a big Alienware Windows 7 box because I just needed the speed, you know, for price performance ratio.
That's probably working pretty good too.
Oh, dude. but you know, in a week or two, I'm going to have Sarah France back on the show. She is an Aperture expert. We're going to talk about Aperture 3. You know, and you know, it is a great product, but I'm a Lightroom guy. I'm not switching. I use PCs. You know, sometimes I'll use a Mac, but I'm not going to go to Aperture the few times I use a Mac. I'm going to go with my standard workflow that I know, which is Lightroom.
Right.
So for me, having, you know, these tools is great, but Aperture is good. But that may have been a good reason for Adobe to push out Beta 2, kind of take some of the hype away from Aperture 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is cool.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that about the Aperture 3, because I've had a couple – I was actually one of the listener questions that I was going to answer at the end of the show, but it's probably a better time to field that now. The listener question that I had was, I'm coming into photography new. I don't have a lot of background or experience with either one. Which one should I be going for? Should I be going for the Lightroom 3, hold off and purchase that, or should I get Aperture 3 now that that's already been released? And my answer to that is, if you haven't gotten either one, wait. Wait until – just go ahead and use the Beta 2. Go ahead and use it because it's a fully functional beta. You're not going to have any limited functionality. The only thing that's limited is the time window. And, I think the time window ends, what, in the end of June or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, so it's got a pretty long time window there. And if you haven't used either, download both. You get a 30-day free trial for both of them. Download both. See which one makes more sense for you, because everyone has different workflows.
Yeah.
And it's going to depend on what your individual needs are. Both are available for free as downloads that you can try for up to 30 days. And whichever one makes sense for you and your workflow, buy that one.
Now, see, if you are a real Mac enthusiast and you've got the Apple TV in your studio, you've got your iPhone, you're going to have your iPad.
You have the iPhoto and all that, yeah.
Man, the ability to just sync all those devices.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that could be an important distinction to make depending on what platform you're on. Because if you're a complete Mac and you don't have any cross platform issues that you need to address, then Aperture may be a better solution for you if you've never had any experience before now with any other software options. So if you're just entering in, you might want to consider Aperture 3 as a first choice and then Lightroom as a second choice. But if you're gear hounds like us, you're probably going to get a copy of both anyway eventually. So it depends on your needs.
You know, with Lightroom 3 coming out now, I mean, already with let's go back. Lightroom 1, I think I said 80% of my work is now in Lightroom, 20% is now in Photoshop. With Lightroom 2, it became seriously close to 100%. I mean, we're talking 95-97% of my work was done in Lightroom and very little was done in Photoshop. In fact, I've done weddings with 2,500 images and never touched Photoshop. So, I mean, my percentage of going into Photoshop is very small. Lightroom 3 takes it to another level, and I'm going to be hard-pressed to actually use Photoshop unless it's going to be for some very specific things, especially in some of the stuff we're going to talk about with CS5.
Yeah.
Because I can't do pixel manipulation in Lightroom. So when I need to do that, I need Photoshop. And the tools in CS5 that we'll talk about give us some tools that are just mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yeah, so we will get there. We will get to CS5, everyone, I promise you. Well, the last one for me, and this may be kind of minor. I don't know. I just think this is really, really handy. In Lightroom 3 Beta 2, one of the things that I often will do is if I'm taking a picture, I'm taking it, and the aspect ratio that you have for your sensor isn't the same as the aspect ratio for prints. All right, unless you're going with, you know, the really small size, the 4x6 prints. So if you want to print an 8x10 or an 11x14, you're going to be cropping. You have to crop. So I'm often taking pictures with that compositional factor in mind. Oh, I know I'm going to crop later, so let me make sure that I'm going wider than what I actually need. So here's what I like about Lightroom 3 Beta 2. When you go to crop and you click on that little rectangle, there's a shortcut now where you can quickly switch it from portrait to landscape mode.
Mm-hmm.
Hit the X key.
Yeah, before you had to
you got to drag and circle, and you had to kind of like box with it a little bit, and it was kind of awkward. Right now, if you want to switch between modes, hit the X key. Beautiful. Clean, simple, easy, done.
Okay, so I got one last one.
Oh, okay, go ahead. And I'm sorry.
This is not going to be for everybody. There's no doubt. I mean, mostly for people who work in a studio, who do product photography, tethering.
Yeah, the tethered shooting is huge. And they're adding more cameras to that all the time. I heard from one user, they said that they actually got their 40D to tether straight.
And there's no reason why it shouldn't, because the 50D isn't a supported camera, but it works.
Yeah.
You know, and most of the Canons are going to work. Most of the Nikons are going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, and now it's not as good as using DSLR Remote Pro. I mean, with DSLR Remote Pro, I can say do a 15 exposure bracket,
right?
You know, and it'll go, you know, I can say do an 8-hour time lapse. You know, I can do some really creative things with DSLR Remote Pro, but that's what it's designed for. Lightroom,
right.
Here's the workflow in a studio. I have a gray card or some other white balance tool. I take a picture, it comes right into Lightroom. I set my adjustments, I set my exposure, I set my white balance, I save that. Now I go import using or tether, you know, capture from the tether using those presets. Now every shot I take, it's already corrected.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And we could go into so many more. There's just so many features that are available in this new version. It's hard to really pick and choose which ones are your favorites, because there's so many. It's like asking to pick a favorite child. You know, I don't know that I could. I picked the first three that I could think of that I'm just totally geeked about. I could go on. Now, you know,
New improvements in speed, performance.
The performance is huge. I mean, when I started Lightroom 2.6, it took a few minutes, and I've got a pretty huge guy. I've got like 40,000 prints. For an enthusiast photographer, that's a lot of images to pull up in a gallery.
Yeah.
And it took a while. Lightroom 3 loaded it all in like half the time.
Okay, well, let's talk about one last thing in Lightroom 3 before we move on.
Okay.
And I think some people are going to think it's a huge deal, and others are going to go, eh.
What? All right, what is it? Fire away.
Video format support.
Okay. So, see, I don't have a video recording camera, so for me,
you know,
it's more that thing.
You know, I normally don't either, but I was in Maui, and I had that Liquid Image snorkel mask. It's got the built-in
camera. Oh, that's right.
Camera. But it also shoots 640 480 video.
That's right. How much video did you pull from that?
I pulled quite a bit. It wasn't all perfect because, you know, my laptop died the first day of the vacation, so I couldn't see anything. So I couldn't really learn from looking at the video how I needed to reshoot the next piece of it to get better at it.
So there was no video chimping?
No, there was not. And, you know, and the thing was, I kept moving too fast. You'd get like seasick looking at the video. But I put some pieces up. I got a piece on YouTube, and I've got a whole article coming out on that, and so you can see the video format. But I didn't even think about the fact that Lightroom had that in there. And
yeah.
I plug in the camera right into, or, you know, the snorkel mask, the USB right into my computer, and I'm like, Lightroom, import, because I'm using Lightroom 3 Beta 2. I'm like, import from the camera, blah, blah, boom. And I'm like going through that. I'm like, wait, that's a piece of video. Click on it.
Play.
It played. I'm like, Wow.
That's cool.
All right.
That's very cool. And here's what I'm going to be interested in seeing, because with that manageability that Lightroom 3 has for video now, where you can actually see the video, you can actually play it in your own native player to your computer, what I'm wondering now is if in the next dot update, where they do Lightroom 3.1 or 3.2 or whatever the next dot version is, after it's released.
Maybe when it's released.
Well, I don't know if it's going to happen when it's released, but what I'll be curious to see is if they do include asset management for PDFs.
Ooh, interesting.
I want to see PDF management come into Lightroom 3 so you can manage almost your entire Adobe product line. Think about it with model releases for a model.
That's true.
I mean, you can tie everything together in one album. You can say, okay, here's all this stuff. Sign that. Here's your copies. Done.
See, what I would like, and you, right now you can see the videos and you can play them.
But you can't.
That's it. I mean, you can grade them and, you know, you can star them and pick them and stuff, but that's it. That's all you can do. You can manage the asset. What I'm waiting for is when I go to the slideshow module, and now I can go still, piece of video, still, piece of video.
Now, oh, I see what you're saying when you build your slideshows. Okay. Right. Okay. Well, yeah, because I've heard a couple of people say that what they'd like to be able to do is edit the video inside of Lightroom, and I'm just thinking
editing is
not so much. Not so much with video, yeah.
If I can take a start point and an end point, so I have basic cropping, I have some sizing, maybe, and some color correction, and I can stick that into a slideshow.
Would you want to be able to white balance your video with your photos?
I mean, yes, of course I would like to, but... You know what? If I can't, I can't. If I have to go into something else, even if I have to go into Premiere or whatever and get it looking perfect because it didn't come out exactly right.
Right.
At least I can take that video back and now add it into the slideshow I'm creating with Lightroom.
And you know, Adobe's got to be thinking about this kind of stuff too. I mean,
I already have to take some images and go edit in Lightroom.
Yeah.
I have no problem with edit in Premiere.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a funny thing, because we're sitting here talking about these things that we'd like to see. For all we know, Adobe's probably already working on CS6 now.
Well,
and they're probably already working on these other additions for Lightroom 3, so that may be coming available down the road. We could be just saying, boy, it'd be nice if we had this feature, and then all of a sudden the next one, it's gone a level past that, just because they're thinking so far ahead of the curve here.
Well,
who knows what's going to happen?
I am confident, very confident, in fact, that there's going to be things in the final release of Lightroom 3 that aren't in Beta 2.
Yeah.
They're going to add some more features. They're going to add some secret sauce that people are just going to like, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe that, this
and that's going to, and that's going to be the push. Who knows? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, okay, moving on. We had so we talked a little bit here about the iPad that just came out from Apple. We've had about 15 minutes where we were talking about Lightroom 3 Beta 2. Before we go on to CS5, because I know you guys want to hear all about that, there's one other little piece of news that came out that I think kind of got missed. It went under the radar a little bit, and it's kind of interesting. And this came out from Data Robotics. And these are the folks that make that Drobo that we've been salivating about. I actually finally caved and got one, so I'm using an older generation of the Drobo, and I have that plugged in. It's tethered to a computer because I didn't have the coin. I didn't have the money to go out and get the Easy Share, the little networking thing that lets you network it among multiple computers. Well, now the latest version of the Drobo has that built in. It's the Drobo. I think it's the FS. I think when I sent you the notes, Kerry, I said LS. I think it's FS because it's for file share.
File share.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can share it across the network. You can manage it remotely.
This also does 5 drives, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got 5 drives in there now, so you can have up to 10 terabytes of storage, which is just huge. Well, I'm sorry, not 10. You'll have 8 because you got to subtract of 1 drive because that's what it uses for backup purposes or for redundancy purposes. So you'll have up to 8 instead of 6.
Now,
so,
you and I talked about this a couple days before they made the announcement, and we were hypothesizing
what
the announcement was going to be, we said, well, it's going to be either a Drobo share or a new unit that has this in. Well, okay, so we were half right, and it was a complete unit, so that was good.
Yeah.
We were right.
We should have recorded that.
Yeah, I know. We were correct that it supports gigabit Ethernet.
Yeah, that's right. It's a gigabit Ethernet. Yeah. Yeah, because
nice
we were – oh, man, it's just funny because you when you see these things coming out that are just – and God, I hope it has this, and then it has that, and it's just, you're almost beside yourself. It's like you don't know what to do with it. So it's pretty exciting stuff. But that's the other big news, was the one from Data Robotics. Now, last but not least, of course, we have – oh, I'm sorry. Did you have more you wanted to mention on Drobo?
No. No, I'm good.
Oh, okay. Because I know the big thing that everyone wants to hear about, which is the big news that just hit the fan today, is Adobe CS5.
Hit the fan.
It did, man. Man, when Adobe dropped that news, they dropped it at 4 a.m. Eastern time. So it was like 2 a.m. my time. I think it was 1 a.m. your time when I saw the information start going up on DP Review and what the pricing was and what all these features were. I was just like, okay, it's going to be a late night, and I have jury duty at 8 a.m. I might be late for court.
I watched the launch announcement when they released it this morning, and
I missed that. Yeah, I missed the launch announcement from Adobe, so unfortunately I can't speak to that. I'll let Carrie talk about that. Tell me what your thoughts were and what kind of stuff they covered from the launch announcement.
Man, I mean, unfortunately, they only spent about 5 minutes on each major segment of CS5, where they probably could have spent an hour on each one. There are so many new improvements. And seriously, if Jason and I were to sit here and go through all the stuff, this would be a 4-hour podcast.
We're not going to do that. Don't worry.
But I do have a list of things. You have a list of things that are just
huge.
Uber cool.
Just huge. Yeah.
Seriously, uber cool. And I think those are the ones that are really going to spark people and get you guys excited about what the possibilities are in CS5. And I'll link to some different articles and some videos and stuff in the show notes. I'm sure Jason will too, so that you can see some of the stuff. There is some mind-blowing features. Let's go right to the very first one, all right? Well, I mean, if you do this in order – on the Adobe site, you're actually going to see bits and pieces of this. They're really not going to talk about it in a general context like I want to.
And if you want, what you can do is we'll also give a link in both our show notes on the Adobe site where you can see all the items. And then as we talk about them, you can checkmark those and say, okay, I don't have to watch that video because we're going to cover it for you here.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that. And you can fill in the gaps on the Adobe site. But the big ones we're going to be hitting here. Do you want to do the first one?
Let's start with the first one.
Man, I wanted the first one.
Okay.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
This is the biggest.
It's huge.
We have used this term several times tonight. This is the biggest game changer.
It's huge.
Is the most incredible feature I think I have ever seen in my life, and it is going to make you distrust every image you see from now on. It's called Content Aware Fill.
Yeah.
And what is Content Aware Fill? If you haven't seen the pictures, let me describe this for you real quick, right? You've got a person standing against a brick wall, but you don't want the person to be there. You just want the brick wall because you want that texture for some reason. So you do a rough outline selection of that person, not anything tight. You can just do this, blah, 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 nice, you know, ugly shape around them and go Content Aware Fill, and it fills in the blanks based on what it thinks should be there. And I'll tell you, I can't imagine that this is going to work as good as it does in every demo I've seen, and I've seen probably 10 demos now.
Yeah,
but
it's huge.
Mind-blowing how well it works.
It's very intuitive. That's what blew me away about the Content Aware Fill, is how intuitive it is. You can take, and it was kind of funny because when Knapp started covering it with their live demos, one person had submitted a question asking how to do content, if you could do Content Aware Fill if hair fell on a model's eye. They asked, do you have a pick? And he didn't. So I kicked him a pick, and if you look at the Knapp forum, at the Knapp demos, they're actually using one of my photos in there, which is kind of cool.
That's cool.
But the cool thing was how well it worked. And this was a huge chunk of hair that was coming over the girl's eye. And it was funny because it was the first time RC had even seen this image. And it didn't look great because it was just, you know, live on the fly. But what it did so quickly was just so amazing. That's how intuitive it was. They didn't have any practice time, any lead time, any research time in using content aware fill with this image. And it did an okay, I mean, it wasn't great, but it did an okay job right off the bat. And that was with a huge chunk of hair. So if you have just a little strand coming down, it'll snap that away. Say you want to use content aware fill to get rid of someone's glasses. It'll get rid of that. If you want to use content aware fill to get rid of, say, someone's watch on their wrist, it'll do it just like that. I mean, it's just – it's so intuitive. It's ridiculous.
When they first posted, which was a few months ago, they actually did a little YouTube video.
Yeah. Showing
this is a you know, possible
– a possible feature.
I have never seen so many expletives posted in comments before.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Holy, I mean, it was
F-bomb this, F that, yeah. It was just,
because that, your jaw drops when you see this the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing.
Sick.
Absolutely amazing.
It's not just cut something out and do a content aware fill. You can use this in a number of different pieces and places within Photoshop. So it's not just cut it out and it replaces it. It has to do with stretching and moving things around, and it's embedded into the engine, so it works in a number of different places. Gotta watch the videos.
Yeah, you definitely have to watch the videos to really appreciate what content aware fill does. Now, keep in mind this is different from content aware scaling, which was present in Adobe CS4. So don't confuse the two and think, well, they're just switching it. Because it's totally different from that. It's not the same. It's not. It's not even, well, it's kind of in the same family, but it's a completely different person.
It is.
On the other side of the family, it's like you're, I don't know. It's
third cousin twice removed.
Yeah, it's third cousin twice removed because that's how different they are. So don't confuse content aware fill with content aware scaling. But watch the videos.
In the video that they showed today during the launch event, they showed another complementary piece of this, which is a new masking tool.
Yeah.
So if you've ever tried to cut someone out of an image, it's very difficult, especially when there's light elements like a hair flowing or a dress or something, that it's very difficult to cut that out. Well, now he just did kind of this rough outline of the horse, and just kept dialing it in until he had all the hair, pulled it right out. Using the content aware fill, it filled in the background, and he was able to reposition the horse on the field, and you cannot tell.
And he did that what, like 30 seconds?
It's nothing. It's so fast. You're just like,
and the funny thing is, previously, to do something like this, you had to go to a third-party app or plugin, like On One, using the On One suite, and that itself cost, what, $500?
Mask Pro, for
that Mask Pro feature. So the fact that that kind of acuity has been dialed in to something directly in Photoshop CS5, it's huge, and it's also saving you money. And a lot of people will start to see, wow, this is going to save me money because I no longer have to get this, I no longer have to get that. And that's kind of a good segue to that second one, unless you had some more on content aware fill.
No. All I can say, you have to see the demos.
You have to see it to believe it, yeah, because it's absolutely stunning. And like Carrie said, you'll never trust a picture you see again.
No, never.
And that kind of speaks to the morality question. And someone actually mentioned this over on the NAF site. They said, well, you know, what about the ethics of it? And I think Scott Kelby said something. If it's an ethical problem for you, don't do it.
Don't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a photojournalist, don't use it. If you're an artist, fire away. But if you're a journalist, don't use it.
I have no problems taking acne, scars, or things off a bride.
Yeah, your job is to make them look beautiful.
Yeah. To me, this is a, I don't want to say a godsend, but, you know, it's certainly right up there, you know.
Yeah, it helps you do your job easier and better.
And faster.
And faster, yeah.
I mean, it's not that I couldn't take a telephone pole out of somebody's head before.
It's just quick. Yeah, it's just so
way faster.
Right, it's like 30 seconds.
Okay.
Zip, zip, zip. Next. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So that kind of the whole idea of paying for additional plugins to do things that Photoshop couldn't do before. This is also, I think, one of the big things behind the second feature, which is merge to HDR.
Oh.
Because inside CS5, the merge to HDR, what is it, Pro HDR or HDR Pro, I think they call it inside CS5. Yeah. I forget which way they have it. Picture Photomatix on steroids, because that's basically what it is. If you've used Photomatix in the past, you can do this natively inside of Photoshop with two key things that are super awesome. Number one is deghosting.
Yep.
You can take this HDR image that you've stacked from multiple exposures, and then you can say, pick this one for composition. So if the leaves are blowing in the wind and you're getting ghosting an artifact, you can say, use this one and ignore the rest. Photoshop does it. It's just like, oh my God. It's such a game changer. Think of waters rippling. So if you're doing landscape type of work and you have rippling water, using
almost
that,
impossible to do an HDR with that.
Yeah. And it was so frustrating for me when I was trying to do HDRs and I'd have rippled water. Seeing this is just like, oh my God. It's just, like Kara was saying earlier, your jaw is on the floor. It is that amazing.
If you are into HDR,
and most people are these days. I think with the way it's getting dialed in, because initially it was a lot of like Harry Potter type effects, and it was over the top, and people doing it.
And not that you can't do that.
Yeah, yeah, and you can still do that, but the fact that you've got so much more fine-tuned control, and there's so many more, it's just so much easier.
Now, I don't want to discourage anyone from buying Photomatix via the ad that's running on Camera Dojo's website.
Yeah, and we've got the same thing, and that's kind of another thing that they hit on over an app is different strokes for different folks. If you've gotten accustomed to using Photomatix Pro, continue to use your Photomatix Pro.
Well, no, I was saying because I make money off that, so.
Oh, I see. Well, the same thing happens over on Canon Blogger. And if you've got a third-party app that you like or that you're interested in, because don't forget, Photomatix Pro also has the light version too.
Yeah. I mean,
and there's different ways to do things. There's multiple tools. Do I have one tool that does all my things? No.
No.
I've got a couple different kinds of screwdrivers. I've got a couple different noise removals. I've got a couple different everything because I like trying different things. Some things might work great inside of Photomatix Pro, and it may not work as well inside of the HDR Pro versus the DS5.
That's a great point for
different images. So
that is a great point right there, because as we said, with things that are in Lightroom 3, even as good as it is, there's a time and a place to go outside of Lightroom.
Yeah.
And even though some of these tools that we're going to talk about are phenomenal and they replace certain plugins and certain third-party apps, there's reasons why there's third-party apps, and it's because they tend to do a more complete job of something.
Right. And depending on what your kind of work is, depending on what type of images you're working with, you may need multiple options. Anyone that chooses only one tool to do everything for them is boxing themselves in unnecessarily.
But I think the fact that if you own Photoshop and you want to play with HDR, you now have a fantastic tool without having to go start with paying even more money for Photomatix.
Right. Yeah, and it's just huge. Merge to HDR is huge. I can't wait to get my hands on it. If you are a Photoshop owner already, going back to CS2, you can upgrade to CS5. And the upgrade is so worth it because the upgrade is like, it's a third the cost of the full version. Buy it. It's only like $300. And if you're using CS2, you're three generations old, you're about 7 years outdated, it's time to update. It's only $300 or $350 for the update. It's worth your money to update at this point.
Yeah.
The backwards compatibility is still there for all the raw formats. If you're on Photoshop, a previous version, CS2, CS3, CS4, CS5 is probably the most game-changing, I shouldn't say game-changing, but the most encompassing changing Photoshop program I've seen probably since the move to CS.
Yeah.
Would be my, that's a pretty broad statement. I don't know.
This is huge. I mean, and they go back to the HDR stuff. They were demoing doing HDR style adjustments with a single image.
Oh, yeah, that's no. Yeah.
They can pull out so much data out of those images, especially raw images.
Yeah.
It was mind-blowing
what they're
able to pull out.
And frankly, most people that I talk to these days that are asking me questions, they're no longer at, because initially the questions were, should I shoot raw or JPEG? Should I shoot raw or JPEG? That's no longer a question. Most people I know are shooting raw. And what CS5 can do with raw images in this single HDR adjustment is huge. Because it used to have only, about a 1 to 1.5, maybe 2 stops?
Yeah, you're in there. And just not being able to pull out all the the detail and everything. Yeah. And this was very cool.
Yeah, and you can go to two stops now and not see any kind of image degradation in quality.
Yeah.
I've seen it already in a couple images that I saw.
But as you do, what do you typically do? You end up adding noise, right?
Right.
Well, it has all the noise reduction stuff that we were just talking about in Lightroom. So
let's talk about another. Hang on, we're moving too fast here. Where were we? We did content aware film, merged HDR. We're on single images. So the noise reduction from Lightroom.
Yeah.
It's also in CS5.
Right. Well, it's also in Camera Raw 5.7, but. Yeah. You know, that's why it's going to be in CS5, and you're going to gain basically the three main features that have been added to Lightroom 3 Beta 2.
Right.
Noise reduction, the ability to add grain, which is kind of funny. You can take noise out and then add it back, and new vignetting controls.
Right.
So those things were in Lightroom 3 Beta 2. They're also in Camera Raw 5.7, and they're going to be standard
in CS5.
Photoshop CS5.
Jeez. Right. I know, there's so many numbers, 3C2, CS5, V1, and don't forget with CS5, you're also going to have ACR version 6 now.
Yes.
You're going to have Camera Raw 6, and there's so many numbers to keep track of, but yeah, you hit it spot on right there. Someone actually mentioned to me in an instant message over on Twitter, or a direct message on Twitter, a really good reason for having that add grain feature for consistency, because say you change your lighting conditions or something changes or you switch to a different camera which has slightly different noise inside that image set and you want to put everything together, it might be easier just to add grain to that set rather than trying to take grain out of a whole different set depending on which is the look and feel you're going for. That could be huge. If you've got multiple shooters that are putting things together, think of your own industry and wedding industry where you have an assistant. Say you have an assistant that's shooting with a 50D and you're shooting with the 1DS Mark III.
Yeah.
They could have different noise levels. Adding grain, half the grain in this one and reducing half the grain in that one makes for consistency all across the board. And okay, I thought that was really good point.
I like to add grain to black and whites. I think
they just add
something to it.
They add a lot of great texture, yeah. It's like and I hate to say this, but it's like bringing that film essence back.
It is. And with black and whites, they tend to look soft.
A little more.
Adding a little grain to it just to me makes a black and white pop a little bit more.
Yep. It gives texture where it used to be muddy.
Yeah.
Is the way I would explain that. But yeah, adding grain, new vignetting is also another cool feature that is coming out in CS5. Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Go ahead.
Well, I actually hadn't used it. Had you been using the pre-release?
I've used it in Lightroom 3 Beta 2.
Okay.
It gives you some advanced controls, highlight priority, tone priority, and things where it's a little more natural looking than the original one. Just tended to look very round, and it just didn't. It looked contrived, if for lack of a better word. It just didn't have a didn't blend as well to it.
Yeah, it didn't blend as well. I think yeah.
And, There were times that you would do it and it would shift a color somewhere. And so improved. And that would happen with certain colors that they would just tweak a little bit. And you're like, oh, man, I really wanted a little soft vignette there just to, you know, focus on the subject a little bit more.
And,
you know, or lighten it. It never really happened when you were lighting it up to get rid of like some lens hood vignetting or something. But when you were darkening, there were times that it would tweak a color once in a while.
Yeah.
And that's all been improved. So the new lens vignetting, very cool.
Now, is this going to be the same vignetting that, because you had mentioned you've been using it in Lightroom 3 Beta 2, that's going to be the same vignetting in CS5?
Yes.
I didn't realize that there was the same one because I had used it in Lightroom 3. I thought it was going to be a whole new vignetting thing.
No, my understanding is it's the same.
Oh, okay. So, I thought you were a beta tester on CS5, so I was like, you talked about it first.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I didn't.
And if I was, I couldn't say.
Yeah. well, you could now. So.
Possibly. Now, the next
I didn't know it was the same.
That cool. I want to throw out there, which I was actually kind of blown away that they went to this level with it, is lens correction. And
that was cool.
Now, this is, again, another one of those times where, wow, maybe I don't need DxO optics anymore. And if you do architecture, you know, and you're trying to take the, you know, very tall image and the building has a tendency to bow out or do some crazy things, You have to use DxO optics to put it back into correct perspective.
Yeah, it's that perspective distortion that you get on wide-angle lenses. The best example is a fisheye lens. So if you can think of a fisheye lens where it bows out and it gives that fishbowl kind of look, what this camera lens correction will do is it'll remove that distortion that you see on the edges. And that can be huge if you're doing art, like Harris said, architecture. So imagine, and I keep on going back to real estate because we just bought and sold houses, but think of doing internal shots.
Absolutely.
Where you're doing shots inside a house. If you're not spot on that nodal point, you're going to get so much distortion on the edges that you want, when you try and stitch that panel together, you're going to have such a difficult time doing that. With this camera lens correction technique, it's going to make doing interior shots, if you're a real estate photographer, so much easier. It's going to make, I saw him take a fisheye lens during the launch today and make it look like it was a regular lens. That's how much distortion it took out in this lens correction.
Okay.
Now, and all you did was, it was just, I'm sorry, go ahead. Oh, I'm all geeked.
Here's what's really going to blow people away, right? Now, if you've ever used the lens distortion correction within Photoshop, you take your wide lens, you got it, now you've got to do the correction for it. What do you end up with? You end up with this very weird shaped image with convex edges on it.
Yep.
Now, you have to then go in and crop that and get rid of the remainder of it.
Yeah.
So that now you've cropped in and you've just lost a good percentage of that image in the distortion correction.
Probably up to 15% would be my guess normally.
And even worse depending on the lens.
Yeah, yeah.
However,
CS5.
When you combine lens correction with content-aware fill,
yeah, it's huge because
my gosh.
You don't have to crop anymore. Another great example is think of panos. If you're outside doing a landscape panorama where you do a 360 view, what you used to have to do when you merged everything together inside of Photoshop, you get that bowing, that convex, like you were saying, you have to crop it out and make it that huge long panorama. No more with that content aware fill. Combining those two things is huge because now you no longer have to lose any data.
Yeah, now the lens correction is based on Adobe's database of camera bodies and lens combinations. Same as DxO Optics.
Right.
But they're going to take it to another level. They're going to have a website where you can download shared profiles.
Oh, that was so cool. That was so cool.
Here's another thing that I took to Maui, right? Sigma sent me a handful of lenses.
Oh, nice.
So now I've got these Sigma lenses that I was playing with. They may not be in the profiles because they're probably going to do Canon lenses with Canon bodies.
Right.
But I can correct my things and then share those for other people.
Right.
Or Sigma could go in and do really good ones, and they could put them up there for users.
Yeah. That just kind of goes back to the whole sense of community that you see happening with these software updates and hardware updates that are happening across the industry. More people are going to be able to share more information through such a wider distribution. If you can start, just think about it. Imagine if you go out to, say, Lens Pro or Lens Rental or Rent Glass or any one of those sites, and you want to use the lens and you're seeing some distortion, you don't even have to take the time to correct it anymore, because odds are by the time you've done that, someone else who has that lens in their hardware setup may have already shared a profile for you, so you don't have to do anything. You can just download it off the website.
Yeah.
It's huge. I mean, it's just, they had so many great ideas in this release. It's just, oh, my God. And we are running out of time. We're already at an hour, and we've got like 1, 2, 3, 4, how many more?
Well, I mean, we could go on.
We could go on.
About Illustrator. We could talk about Flash Catalyst. We could talk about
Premiere, rotoscoping. There's.
I do want to touch on Premiere. And
okay.
You touched on the thing right there that I want to talk about.
I'm sorry.
Okay. It's all right. But Just to finish up with Photoshop.
Yeah, there's a couple more things about CS5 that were really cool you may want to be aware of. We got three left, actually, that were pretty high on our list. Do you want to tackle the next one, Gary?
New brushes. We'll just group that. They have all new brushes. You can have these natural media brush tips, so they act like real bristle brushes.
Yeah.
And even combine that with a Wacom tablet and even have it can detect the rotation of the barrel, so you can paint and draw and do things like calligraphy. Like, it's just,
If you're a painter, and you've been using Corel, you may want to make the switch to Photoshop now. I know that's a pretty bold statement because I don't do a lot of painting, but in seeing what Corey did in the NAP demo today with his brushes where he was changing all the – oh, my God. Just, you got to see this in action. It's just stunning what they've done with this new release. I can't think of a time where they've added more things. And the beautiful thing is I don't think they've really gotten rid of anything.
I can't think of anything.
Because there was only one thing I heard them ask or I heard them mention during the live sessions with NAPP today, and it was so minor. It was some filter, and you could get it back if you went in and opened it in 32-bit mode because it's not available in 64-bit mode. And I forget which one it was, but it was so minor. It's like, who uses that?
Yeah.
You know? So, and that's the beauty of it. They've added so much. And they haven't got rid of anything. So they've just increased the functionality tenfold. And it's the same pricing as any of the other updates. They had what? The standard update is $149? How much is the standard update?
I don't know.
I think it's $199 for the standard, $349 for extended is the upgrade price. The full price is $699 and $999. And that's just for the Photoshop. That's just to get Photoshop CS5. If you want to get into the package distributions, like the design premium or the web premium or the production premium, go to Adobe's website and you can get the prices for all those packages there. But if you think about it, $150 for an upgrade like this, that's not
unreal.
That's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. You can do cross-platform upgrades as well. So if you just migrated to a Mac or you just migrated to Windows 7 from an older Mac, although I don't. I'm just going from Mac to Windows, but whatever. So you can do cross-platform upgrades. They'll let you cross over on that as well. So CS5, definitely worth it. Did we hit on everything we needed to hit on, Kerry?
Well, there's one last one in Photoshop. And
oh, I missed my list.
Oh, Puppet Warp.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one. I'm not sure I would use that much, so why don't you talk about that?
Puppet Warp is, again, this is going to go back to not being able to trust images.
Yeah.
Because I can take a picture of a person, draw some lines on their body, down their chest, their legs, their arms, put in points where there are joints, the wrist, the elbow, the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can manipulate those and move someone's hand out of the way. I can put it in a slightly different position. So I get an image, it's perfect, but their arm just needs to be a little over to the left or something. I can now move it, but it obeys the physics of the lines that you've put on as if a puppet would, and you can do all kinds of stuff. They had a demo of Scott Kelby, and he started with his arms down at his side, and they had him like do YMCA, you know?
Yeah, and it was pretty slick.
You're just like, no way. I mean, it's...
And it looked and the funny thing is it looked totally natural. Like he was saying, they kept the physics of it in line, so it's not like it was, you know, the Photoshop Disasters website is what I thought of when I saw this, is none of this would ever end up on that site because it looks so natural to me.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I saw one where this bride was standing there, but she was kind of leaned back a little too far. It looked a little unnatural, so they just strained her up a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh.
Just,
no.
Yeah, it's huge. It's just huge. Just if you don't want to upgrade, if you don't want to spend the money to go out and get the full version or get the upgrade, at least do yourself a favor and download the trial and play with it for a while.
Oh yeah. So there's two features that I want to talk about for Premiere Pro because a lot of people are getting into the video.
Yep.
And whole convergence. These are going to be some really cool things going on. I do video every day. I mean, I'm virtually every day. I have a full-time client. This is what I do. I do video every day. So Premiere Pro, that's my tool of choice. And, you know, that's why I bought this huge Alien. When I say huge Alienware box, you have no idea. This thing is monstrous. It is gigantic, right? It's the fastest machine I could get to do Premiere Pro. And, you know, it's good. It's a good setup I have right now.
Hang on. Before you go into the Premiere, briefly describe your setup. What kind of specs do you have on this for the Alienware box?
Okay, so this Alienware box, I started to look at it. It's an i7 processor, 8 gigs of RAM, Windows 7 64-bit, 10,000 RPM drives,
Oh my god!
So just, I mean, I maxed
it's,
out.
It's maxed out. It's that's the pimp daddy of computers, basically.
It is. I mean, this thing, and it's seen, and it's got like this alien head with red eyes that just kind of pulse at me. It's just kind of freaky.
That's cool, though.
Yeah.
Sorry, is, guys. This is two gearheads that are geeking
it is,
out.
It totally is seriously a big machine, but I needed it because I do so much video work these days, and I was just pulling my hair out. I mean, I've got really good friends at Adobe, and I'm calling them. I'm like, guys, you got to help me with this. What is going on? I just can't believe this powerful machine is still taking this long to do rendering and to do things. Don't get me wrong. It's significantly faster than what I had before by a factor of like 3. So it was worth the money. It still wasn't good enough for me.
Right.
And with this much hardware, I want something better.
Right.
And they're like, okay, look, we're going to show you something. All right.
Yeah.
And this was a couple weeks ago. And I'm like, okay, well.
Oh, you got the inside track. Very nice.
We're going to show you Mercury Playback Engine.
That's awesome.
Like, okay, what's the deal? And they're like, yeah, okay. And they do some demos. I'm like, okay, when can I get this?
Yeah, yeah. When's it available? I need to buy it now.
You're talking like real-time rendering.
Real-time
all your
rendering, wow.
It is.
That's huge. Because I've got a buddy that does a lot. Besides you, believe it or not, I have other friends. And he uses Premiere a lot. And his chief complaint prior to this release was that it was halftime rendering because it had to process it in real time. And then it took time after that to even render the output. That was his big complaint. So they've done amped up to real-time rendering now?
It is absolutely amazing. Now, this is something to be aware of. The entire CS5 suite is 64-bit only. So
you're
not going to run this on Windows XP Pro 32-bit. You're not going to run it on Windows 7 32-bit, Vista 32. This is only going to run on 64-bit machines, and you're going to want a lot of RAM.
Right.
You know, 8, 10, 12 gigs of RAM.
So, right.
I mean, this is serious tools that require serious hardware.
And
so that's why I was getting prepped with the hardware right now.
Right, and that's probably an indicator that this is probably not for your average enthusiast either, because the hardware expenses are going to be up there to get that beefy of a system.
Yeah, yeah.
So, go ahead.
Most people can probably get away with Premiere Elements, which is a great video editing tool. You can do a lot of stuff with it, and I'm sure after CS5, the next release of Premiere Elements is going to be really, really good.
That much better, yeah, because everything just goes up a notch. So, you know, it's like a trickle-down effect kind of thing, you know, where just everything increases in quality after that. But if you're doing professional-level work, Premiere is probably going to be a one that you want to consider because of that real-time rendering like you were saying with the Mercury Playback. And I kind of spilled the beans on your other one, so why don't you talk about Rotoscoping?
Along with the real-time rendering and all the effects working in real-time and multiple layers all working at the same time.
It's unreal.
Here's what blew me away, right? Is they went, okay, now save as H.264, boom, 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 click, okay, done. I was like, what just happened?
Yeah. What?
What? And I'm like, wait, where's the 20 minutes, 30 minutes that I spend right now? They're like, no, watch that. Let me do this again. Let's save this as a flash file. Click, and it went,
done.
I'm like, wait, could you do that again? Near instantaneous saving. As fast as it saves the projects today, it was saving the final output.
Jeez.
I was just like,
that's insane.
Now I can triple my productivity with Premiere Pro.
And that's the beauty of it. And that's the same. It's the same kind of thing across the board with all these applications. If you look at the amount of time that you're going to spend sitting behind your computer in post-production versus time out spent creating new projects, getting new clients, drumming up new business, that alone is worth the investment, in my opinion, regardless of whether you're talking about Premiere or CS5 or Lightroom 3, any of these products.
Yeah.
Any of these products are going to save you so much time.
This is another one of those where I could probably spend 20, 30 minutes going into a bunch of new features in Premiere Pro, but I know that's not going to be the big thing for most of our listeners.
Right.
But there's one last one in Premiere Pro that when I saw that today,
Tell me.
I about fell out of my chair.
I didn't have time to watch the premiere, so I need to hear about the rotoscoping.
Yes, rotoscoping.
Tell me about it.
What is rotoscoping? You've seen it on TV. A great example is if you watch things like the Discovery Channel or the History Channel, and they have an old still or an old drawing, and somehow they've animated different layers of it. So, something moves behind something else, and you're like, wait, I'm sure that was like some old drawing, and they've managed to take elements of it and blend them over each so that it becomes an animated piece. That is so painful to do. It's not that it's difficult to do, it's just painful to do. It's so many steps to do that in After Effects today. And to the point where some really big names in our industry, Kurt Aponovich, Robert Evans, I mean, they started a service called Photo Roto, and they were doing it for like weddings and engagement shots, but it's very expensive because it's so time consuming to do these. What they showed today, they had this person there, and the scene is changing. This is video. This isn't stills. This was video. And the guy, he draws like a triangle through this person. You want to talk about a rough, you know, mask? He didn't like go around and select every little pixel. And that's
awesome.
Boom, and it selected that person. I was like, okay, that was kind of sick right there to begin with. And then this is using the rotoscope tool. Now you can sit there and you can do manipulations just on that piece, color correction, sharpness, saturation, all that good stuff, and then give it a motion path.
Yeah.
And using the content-aware fill, it knows how to move the subject that you've selected on top of the background in different angles and stuff. Like, anybody can do rotoscoping now.
Which is just, in a way, it's a good thing, in a way, it's a bad thing, because it's going to make it so much easier, but it's also
going
to...
We are going to see the world's proliferation of rotoscoping next year. I mean, we're going to see it everywhere, because everybody is going to be able to do this, where it took a lot of work. And I can't stress enough how much work this was. It was so much work to do rotoscoping today that I don't do it. I mean, I don't do it for anybody. I don't care. I mean, I would outsource it before I would do it myself. If someone said, I want my wedding picture to be rotoscoped, I'd go, fine. It's going to be $6,000. I'm going to outsource it. Now I'm going to be able to do these myself in like no time.
That's awesome.
Add them into a slideshow. Going to blow people away with
that's
what
awesome. That's just making me more and more interested in video myself. I don't have the gear set up myself right now to justify making the move to Premiere Pro. So I'm going to stick with the Premiere Elements, with the lighter version. But the features that it has available for the Pro side is it's just unparalleled from what is going on in the past.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I seriously was getting ready to order more hardware so that I could put together a rendering farm using After Effects to get my videos to go out faster. And now, I'm holding off on a major, and we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars of hardware purchase because of Premiere Pro CS5.
Wow, that's awesome.
It can do it faster than what my rendering farm is going to be able to do.
That's awesome. And when you can save that much time and that much energy towards a particular end, I don't see why you wouldn't if it's
anybody,
in your playbook.
Anybody who is in this industry who believes in the phrase time is money needs to go buy CS5.
Yeah. And CS5 alone is just I'm having trouble finding words, and people know that I'm a pretty talkative, chatty guy.
Right.
For me to be dumbfounded and speechless,
I'm going to get all the comments. I'm going to get the Apple fanboy comments. I'm going to get the, you guys were really hyping this up. But in all seriousness, and
we're not
getting
paid by anyone, by the way.
No, I'm not sponsored by Adobe. Hint, hint, Adobe. Tom Fogarty, give me a call.
Tom, hello, Adobe.
Here's what I'm saying, right? In all honesty, the cost of buying CS5, you know, and I'm only going to have to do an upgrade, but still, it's a big chunk of money for the whole production suite. the cost of upgrading, I will probably recoup that in less than a week.
Oh, easily.
I mean, now, you're going to tell me that that doesn't have significant value when I can double or triple, at least double. Let's just say I can double my productivity.
Wow. Hello.
I mean, I can make up the cost of the upgrade in probably a week. One big job, and I've just made up my time.
Yeah.
It's
huge.
It's a no-brainer upgrade. It's huge. It's a lot of money. But if you're making money at this stuff and you believe in time is money and you need to maximize your time, content-aware fill, noise reduction, the HDR stuff, the new corrections that you can do, you know, being able to do the touch-ups so much better, being able to add painting effects to things, all the new tools that just they buy you time. And I can't stress that enough. These are tools that will buy you time back and make you more effective. You know, David, who used to be on the co-host on the show, when before Lightroom came out, he would shoot a wedding, and it would literally take like 40 hours to process the video, the pictures from a wedding.
Yeah.
With Lightroom, he has got that process down to a couple hours. And then there's some other work that he goes into Photoshop to do. And those are the things that are real time consuming, where you're taking a telephone pole out of someone's head, or you're doing some manipulation to them. With these tools, now you've cut that time. Not a little bit. You cut that time significantly.
Yeah. I would say easily in half. Wouldn't you say that that's easily just at least in half?
If you don't cut your time in half when you're doing some of these things, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah. Or you're not doing it enough.
You know, when I need to take an airplane out of a shot, I want to remove that car. I want to take my ex-wife out of that picture. You know, those types of things, you know, where content-aware fill is going to save you that much time. It's just huge.
Well, we've been going on for like an hour and a half here almost, so let's get to a couple listener questions. I had one other one that I wanted to bring into the show because I already brought one in earlier from our discussion on the new product releases. So I'm going to hold off on that and let you take questions that you had from your end if you have any for this week's show, Kerry. We kind of did this show at spur of the moment. We're just like, okay, it's fine.
I don't remember where I put them.
Okay.
You go with yours, and I'll go and find mine.
Okay. This first question that came in to me came in from Paul in Australia. And Paul wrote in, hey, you know, loving the show, blah, blah. I'll get to the meat here. He says, I'm planning on purchasing a printer to do some larger format black and white photographic printing. There are some excellent printers out there, and I've narrowed down my selection to a couple from each of the main brands, Epson, Canon, and HP. From previous experience, the biggest cost with home printing is not the printer, but the inks. So he hit the nail right on the head here. Yes, inks are the biggest cost. He knows not to resort to third parties, so kudos to Paul for knowing that about the poor quality and cheaper price. You get what you pay for. His question is more about reducing the ink cost. There are some CIS systems, and he mentions the CIS systems that are out, that there are CIS systems out there, but he's unsure if the printer's brand supply brand, if there's supply branded inks for these systems, and if I have any suggestions for that. This is a great question, and CIS systems are just it's probably the best way to save money if you're doing printing at home. I had actually considered doing a CIS system on my Epson 1400. We've got an 1400 at work that has a CIS system plugged into it because we print out huge banners at work that are like literally 60 feet long by probably 3 foot wide. And if you try doing that with the smaller consumer grade ink cartridges, you couldn't even do one print. So the CIS system can be a huge saver in the way of money, and it can add to your printing options if you implement something like that. I don't have enough show notes in front of me to give you a specific recommendation on the brand to go out and get for your system. It would depend primarily on what brand you end up picking. Like you said, you're looking between the Epson, the Canon, and the HP. I would recommend Epson. All my printers are Epson. I've got an Epson NX300. I've got the Epson R1800. At work, we've got the R1800. I like the Epson line. I'm very happy with the Epson line. Canon, please forgive me for saying that, because I haven't used your print, even though I use your camera stuff. But I would recommend the Epson line for the printing systems. Send me an email if you want to get more specifics on a particular CIS system, and I can get you details on that. But I would recommend going that route if you're going to be doing a lot of prints at home. If you're not doing prints at home, I actually would not recommend – or if you're not doing a lot of prints, I should say, I would not recommend a CIS system, primarily because it's not going to make sense as far as the investment goes, because the big tanks that you have to plug into, they aren't cheap. I mean, you're talking like, yeah. I think they're $50 for a tank for one color. So if you've got a six-color system, you've just invested $300 in inks. Unless you're knocking out hundreds of prints all the time, it's just not going to be worth it for you. So if you're doing that many prints at home, definitely get the CIS system. Let me know, or let us know, what printer you end up going with. Like I said, I recommend the Epson line. Whichever line you go with, though, most CIS systems are compatible with multiple printing systems. So if you get back to us and let us know what printer you end up going with, we can probably make a better recommendation so we know what size prints you're going to be doing. He had mentioned A2. Large format A2, black and white as well as color. So I'm assuming you're probably not going to be going too long in the way of banners. That end of it might not be as big a deal for you, but if you're doing the 11x14s and, you know, 16x20s, yeah, that could definitely save you a lot of money. I think it gets down to the pennies per print instead of like 10 or 15 cents per print in terms of overall cost for ink and paper. You're getting down to the single-digit cost there if you implement a CIS system long-term. So that's the first question, or the second question I had. That came from Paul in Australia. Paul, thank you very much for writing into the show. And and here's another little quick announcement since Carrie's still
– I was just going to follow up on that.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I didn't know you're back. Sitting here next to my desk, I have an Epson R280. That's my standard photo printer.
Yep.
It works great.
Yep.
But I also had someone ask about 4x6 prints. That's what they wanted to do specifically. And this weekend, I'm shooting a charity event, and we're going to be doing 4x6 prints right there.
Very cool.
So I needed to find a printer to answer the question, but I also needed to find a printer that I was going to use, because my R280 – it's not that fast. Even on the 4x6s, it's just not that fast.
Yeah.
And I wanted something that was going to really kick them out fast, reliably.
Yeah.
And we looked at all these little ones where, you know, they print one image at a time. You put in a CF card. You hit print. A minute later, an image comes out. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to have to buy like four of these at $100 a pop, you know. And
yeah.
The management now of all these CF cards and everything, I'm like, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And so I looked around, I did some more shopping, and I talked to the guy at my Micro Center, and he's like, take a look at this. And he showed me the Canon MP640. And what I really liked about this one is, A, it's Canon, so it's a good brand. I mean, Canon, Epson, you know, they're all good brands. Nikon doesn't make printers. The ink in them, when you look at the ink cartridge, you can actually see how much ink is in there. It doesn't come with quote-unquote starter ink. It comes with full cartridges.
The cartridges weren't
that expensive. I mean, cart ink is expensive, but they weren't ridiculously expensive like others.
Right.
And it pumps out 4x6s like nobody's business. It's about 8 to 8 pages per minute.
You're doing 8 4x6s a minute on that?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's really good, actually.
So here's the workflow. They stick the CF card, and I'm going to be shooting JPEG because it's the only way I can do it with this, right?
Right.
They're going to stick the card in, and it's got like the old iPod wheel on it. Uh-huh. So you go through, you select it, you go, and there's a plus and minus for how many copies you want. You go plus, spin, plus, spin, plus, spin, sput. And you go through and you select all the new ones that are there. She's got to have a piece of paper that says what the last image number was on that card, so she can hand it back to me. I can keep shooting on it. And then hand it back to her, and she can pick up where she left off. She goes through and selects all the ones she wants to print, then says okay, and then it starts kicking them out. And it goes boo, boo, boo.
How does it go again?
Boo, boo.
Oh, very cool.
These were $149 a pop.
Oh man, that's cheap. In the printing world, that is really cheap. If you look at the R1800s and 1900s and 2400s, you're talking $600-700. So well, I ended up buying two of these. Yeah, that's awesome. What a great price. Wow. And what's the model number on that?
It's the MP640.
MP640. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. So probably my link will probably go to the one over at B&H. I don't know where Kerry does most of his business. You mentioned Micro Center.
Yeah, but I'll probably put up – I'm sure we'll find a link somewhere that people can go to for it.
Okay.
Very cool.
That's awesome.
You don't have to have a computer connected to it. You can just use your compact flash cards. Here's the other thing, though. It's got Wi-Fi built in.
Nice. So if you have the SDI-Fi in your camera, you can direct print that way, too.
Yep. It's a perfect bridge. You know,
that's awesome.
Or if I've just got my laptop and I'm sucking them in there, I can just print remotely to it.
So here's the other question, I guess, getting back to the original question. Could you implement a CIS system in that printer?
I don't know. I'm not that familiar with those. Anytime I start looking at the cost of getting into that system, plus the fact that a lot of these printers, they have chips that are in the cartridges that count how many prints come out, and then you start getting into these weird issues of having to try and reset those cartridges.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare. Every time I do that, I go, you know what? It's cheaper to go to Costco.
That's just funny.
Costco is like 4 cents a print right now. I mean, why would I do this in house? They were doing 8x10s for $1.99.
Yeah, and unless you're doing huge, like this just gets back to the original point, unless you're doing huge production runs, like you're operating your business out of your house and you've got all your own equipment, unless you're doing something like that, getting a CIS system probably isn't going to be really all that cost effective because the cost of printers has dropped so much. It's going to be just as quick, just as easy for you to save as sRGB and, like Gary said, take it to Costco, take it to MPix, MPix Pro, White House Custom Color, whoever you want to print through, whether it's a
and
local.
Even your wherever. Costco, I can upload them online.
Yeah.
By the time I get there, they're printed.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's so many options out there. And that's one thing I really didn't want to get into, but you know, if you are printing at home and if you're doing huge production runs, a CIS system is definitely worthwhile considering, but that's only if you're doing huge production runs. Outside of that, I actually wouldn't recommend doing printing in-house just because the cost is disproportionate. It's hard to justify anymore with the decreasing cost that vendors have, whether you're talking brick and mortar or online. You know, the cost,
absolutely.
It's just not justified as much as it used to be. Do you want me to tackle my last question, or do you want to insert one of your
own? I'll throw one in here, and we can both work on this one.
Okay.
Jeremy Clark, who's from Ontario, says he's been watching all the videos and listening to the podcasts and all that stuff, and learning more about alternative lenses like Tamron and Sigma, but he's having a hard time deciding on which one to purchase. He knows he wants like F2.8s, and he borrowed a 24-70 2.8L from a friend, but he understands he can't afford L series glass. So the question he has is which company, Tamron or Sigma? And David Zeiser says it's not the lens, it's the person behind the lens that takes the photos. You know, so what do I think? Well, you know, I wanted to just say, well, Sigma, because they just sent me some lenses to try, but. The reality is that the quality of the lenses from Tamron and Sigma today are much better than they used to be.
Yes.
And they both have, just like Canon, low-end lenses and high-end lenses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tamron has their pro version. Sigma has their pro quality lenses. But those third-party lenses are going to be cheaper than the Canon pro lenses.
Yeah.
And I have been shooting with a Sigma 24-7 2.8. For a long time, I shoot with a Tamron 12-24, same as David Zeiser. Been shooting that thing for a long time. I love those.
Yeah.
They've been great. So I shoot with both Tamron and Sigma.
And Canon. You've got Canon lenses in your bag, too.
Of course I've got Canon lenses in my gear. I will say, at the recent PMA show, I sat down with both Tamron and Sigma and played around with their lenses. You know what? I don't know that I could easily make that decision today. They're both great quality products.
Yeah, it's a really tough call. I'm in the same boat you're in, Kerry, because I've had my hands on several Sigma lenses too. I've tested the 18-250. I tested the 50-1.4. I own the 70-28 macro lens. You know, and like you said, the quality of optics in these third-party lenses is not what it used to be. Everyone stepped up their game so much. And this, you know, we were talking about the Drobo and CS5 and all these software things. The same advancements are being made in optics too.
Oh yeah.
And everything is trickling down. So as new lenses come out with the quote unquote big boys, whether it's Canon or Nikon or Pentax or whoever, that same technology is applying to third party lenses. And if you have the money and you can justify it, and the general rule of thumb is spend your money on the glass. You know,
absolutely.
Because the bodies come and go. But if you don't have the money, you don't have the money to get the best lens you can afford. So if the best lens you can afford means you're getting a Sigma, you're getting a Sigma. You know, if the best lens you can afford means you're getting a Tamron, you're getting a Tamron. They're all going to have, you know, the autofocus points. They're all going to be have critical sharpness. You know, if you're shooting properly, if you've got good technique and you've got good composition, any lens is really going to do it for you. You know, you can do, and we can go from the hardware perspective, from you know, picking at pixels and saying, well, there's a little bit extra distortion over here and a little bit of chromatic aberration there.
I know, but if you go and you look at, go to DP Review. Go to some of these high-end review sites.
Yeah.
And look at the reviews of these lenses. They're really good.
They're on par, yeah. Yeah, and that's totally what I'm getting. As you can really, if you even really go to the nitty-gritty level, yeah, you might find some minor nuances between the Canon L and the Sigma Pro grade. Is it that much of a difference? Probably not anymore. You're not going to see the same kind of drop-off in quality that we used to even five years ago, you know, let alone 10, 20 years ago when some of these third-party vendors didn't even exist.
Yeah.
You know, but these days, the technology is there. Where just go with the best you can afford. I have a little bit of a preference towards Sigma, primarily because I haven't used the Tamron lenses in the last 5 years. So I can't really intelligently speak to Tamron's quality, but I would guess they're probably in line with Sigma, which Kerry just confirmed as well. So I totally agree with your sentiments there.
I am in the same boat. As I have not, other than at PMA, I have not held the new Tamron lenses in my hand. I do shoot with a Tamron 12-24. I've had it for years.
Yeah.
Now, what did I just had? I just took the new Sigma 2470 2.8 and the new 7300 f4 f5.6 with all their new image stabilization in it.
Yep.
Those lenses rocked.
Oh, they're amazing. Yeah, they're absolutely amazing. It's ridiculous quality. And the funny thing is when you start looking at these lens tests, like these benchmark tests that they do, like if you look at popular photography, and they've got a pretty extensive benchmark testing system where they're in really controlled environments, you know, where they're setting these cameras up on like a vice grip, and they've got a test chart that they're testing at exactly 20 meters away, exactly 50 meters away, exactly 60 meters, you know, and they're testing out all these ranges and they're seeing the drop off, and they're looking at that at those scaling charts to see, you know, how much drop off you have at different ranges and, you know, at different light measurement controls. 99% of the shooting population doesn't have that kind of control. You're not going to notice a difference most of the time.
Yeah.
You really aren't. So, and if you don't have the money for it, now if you have the money, I would always recommend go with the best quality lens because there is that little bit better difference. But if you need to save money, if it's the difference between getting one Canon L and two Sigma Pro lenses.
No brainer.
You know, it's a no brainer kind of question. Just I really like the Sigmas. I'm actually leaning more towards that for my lens investments as well. So yeah, I'd say go with Sigma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Do you have another one?
Yeah. Did you have another question, or do you want to make this the last one?
I do have another one.
Why don't we take yours and I'll answer Nasir's. Nasir wrote one. It's basically about tethering, which we spoke to in Lightroom 3, so I can get back to him specifically on that. Take your last one because we're at an hour 45.
Okay. So I don't care. We'll keep going. Jeremy Hargis asking if I could recommend any books on posing. And he's working his way towards wedding photography and
good question.
Wants to go in to the first one with, you know, some good tools in his bag to really know how to pose people better. And the very first thing that came to my mind, David Zeiser's new book, Captured by the Light.
Yep. That was going to be my recommendation, so I can't really contribute anything else.
It covers lighting. It covers posing. It covers working with crowds. It is the consummate wedding photography book.
Yeah. And
that, okay, so that was a quick one. You want to do yours?
I didn't think it was going to be that quick, sure. Nasir wrote in. He said, I've got a Canon 400D, and I want to set it up so I can get live image appearing on my laptop when I take a picture so I know the dimensions are correct. The capture mode doesn't allow me to do that. It just captures the picture after I press the button. So basically, he's looking to get a capture with live info reporting of the EXIF data. I'm pretty sure.
Does that camera support live image?
I know the
higher levels, the 40, 50, 60 Ds. And I mean, I know those, but I don't know the Rebel line at all.
Well, I know when you use the EOS capture utility, it does that. It uses the same technology to monitor a folder. So it pulls the image off the camera and puts it on your computer. And I believe you can get it to show you the EXIF data. So if you purchase any SLR from Canon, you get that CD.
Right.
When you purchase the camera. I don't know if there's a way where you can have it show the dimensions or not. I would have to go back in and go through the EOS capture utility to see what the configuration options are, primarily because I'm using Lightroom now for my tethering. I don't use the EOS capture as much, and this kind of goes back to the Lightroom 3 Beta 2 with all the cameras that are supported. You know what? My answer would be download a trial of Lightroom 3 Beta 2 and try tethering that. So
the problem I have with the Lightroom tethering is it allows me to press the shutter, and that's it. Where the EOS utility or DSLR Remote Pro, I can actually bring up on my computer screen the live view image, and now I can look. I'm looking at my camera viewfinder. Through a 24-inch monitor.
Yeah.
And at that resolution, when I'm trying to do product photography, now live, I can dial in my focus. And to me, that's huge. Now, I don't really mind so much that Lightroom can't do it, because what I do normally is I'll go into live view mode and I'll zoom in real tight, get my focus done, lock it down in manual focus, and then go back to the computer and start bringing in the images. So it's nice that I can do that with the EOS utility or with DSLR Remote Pro. It'd be cool if I could do it with Lightroom, but I don't expect Lightroom to be the end-all, beat-all tethering solution, so I'm not going to bitch about it.
Right.
But so
complain. He's not going to complain about it, folks. He didn't say that.
If that's what you're looking for, that ability to have that live view image on your computer, you need a camera that supports it, and you need either DSLR Remote Pro or the EOS utility.
And I'm not even sure the EOS utility will show a full screen live image view.
It does. On my 50D. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure if it goes back that early though. I guess it would if it's included with the camera. So yeah, it probably would. So look for to answer Nasir's question, there should be some settings within the EOS capture utility that will let you get a live view on your monitor. Oh yeah, because I did it with my XT, and that's a 350. So yeah, I know it's supported in the 400D because you can do it with an earlier version. I would have to go wade hip deep in the menus, and I just hadn't been doing that because, like I said, I've been using Lightroom 3. The other book I actually wanted to recommend because I had to pull it up was one from Bill Herter that came out last year on the wedding posing, to kind of backtrack a little bit on the other question. The title of the book is Master Posing Guide for Wedding Photographers.
Oh, absolutely.
And you can get that one for $15 online.
Oh, nice price.
Yeah, so you – oh, wait. I'm sorry. You can get it for $15 if you own a Kindle. If you don't own a Kindle, it's $20. So, but it's a great book. It's a great resource. I was trying to remember where mine was, but all my books are packed up, so I couldn't remember the title, and I had to Google it. I'm like, oh, what's Bill's book? So I had to look it up. Master Posing Guide for Wedding Photographers just came out last year. Really good book. But David Zeiser's Captured by the Light is probably the new benchmark for the photo posing and just wedding photography in general. I just want to throw that second one in there as well, because that's a really good resource too.
Well,
so
I don't know about you, Jason, but I think now I have set a new record for lengthy podcast.
Yeah,
my last one was an hour and a half. We're at an hour and 45.
Yeah, this is definitely enough time for one show. Carrie, where can people find you if they want to stop over at Camera Dope?
Wow,
you can tell we're doing this off the cuff. Where can people find you, Carrie?
At cameradojo.com.
Cool.
Or carriegarrison.com. Everything will be in the show notes. Twitter.com/Kerry Garrison. Twitter.com/Camera Dojo. Same with Facebook. Facebook.com/Kerry Garrison and Facebook.com/Camera Dojo. Jason?
Okay. Learning digital photography can be found at canonblogger.com. You can also call in. This is another big feature that I actually wanted to mention real quick.
Just
added a phone number. I added an 800 phone number. So if you want to call into future shows, we can actually take your live recorded call on the show. If you call 866-809-8663, you can call into the show and get your questions answered for free from me and or Kerry on the show. You can find me at twitter.com/CBJason. The CB is for Canon Blogger. The website is canonblogger.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thanks to the Camera Dojo crowd for letting me come out and listen.
I forgot. We talked about this a week ago. I did the same freaking thing. So I also have a number that people can call and leave voicemails on for live questions on the air. That number is 888-436-8647. And I think it spells like smell butt or something. I'm not sure. I'll figure it out. It was some weird cut butt or something. It's some weird thing. But 888-436-8647. Leave a message. We'll answer them on live. Jason, it's been cool having you on the show.
Hey, it's been cool having you on. We're basically going to do a simul broadcast where he's going to post the exact same audio content. I'm going to post the same audio content. So, yeah, Kerry, been great. Been a lot of fun. We'll have to do this more often. We've got other news coming down, too.
If you listen to Camera Dojo, you really won't need to listen to Learning Digital Photography this week.
And if you listen to Learning Digital Photography this week, you really won't have to listen to Camera Dojo.
But next week, we'll do it different.
That's right. We're going to mix it up so you don't know. You're going to have to listen to both shows every week just to see if it's the same content or not. We're just evil that way, aren't we, Kerry?
Yeah. Well, there was so much going on.
There is.
We're both going to do the same content this week. Hey, let's just do the same content this week.
Kilt your birds. Be done. We're out.
All right. Talk to you later, Jason.
Kerry, have a good night. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Boom. Okay.